Completely Conspicuous, Episode 284, June 25th, 2013. Welcome back to Completely Conspicuous. I'm your host, Jay Kumar. This week I've got part two of my conversation with guest Rick Doobie as we present our ideas for rebooting classic sitcoms. I've also got the Bonehead of the Week and music from Mets, Speedy Ortiz, Magical Clouds, and Murray A. Lightburn. As always, please send any comments, questions, or Paula Deen career options to j.kumar@gmail.com. Also, please check out Completely Conspicuous at compconcast.blogspot.com and on Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter at Coomdog. And you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. Now here's Mets with Can't Understand. Now, back to my conversation with Rick Doobie.
Okay, my next one is it's a reboot of Laverne and Shirley.
This pretty much always exists. There's always one of those on. Right now it's that Two Broke Girls.
Yes, yep.
There's always a reboot of Laverne and Shirley on.
Well, this is an actual reboot using the names, because Gary Marshall is unveiled, and it's a movie.
Oh, now we're talking.
starring Emma Stone and Ellen Page as the two 20-something roommates who work at a hip microbrew pub in Seattle.
That's a good get. Good get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Grunge jokes and random appearances by the likes of Mark Arm and Tad Doyle abound. Lenny and Squiggy, played by Chris Pratt from Parks and Recreation, and Jay Baruchel.
Ooh, that's good.
It's edgy.
I like the way you're thinking. I like the way you're thinking. That's good.
Yeah.
That's great. It makes me want to dig out my old Lenny and the Squig tones.
I was just reading about that. Actually, there was a good AV Club interview with Michael McKean, Random Roles one, where he talks about the Lenny and the Squig Tones album.
Does he talk about it at length or like
somewhat?
In depth?
Yeah. I mean, it's about different. It kind of is about different roles through his career, but he does talk about the Squig Tones album and like you know Christopher Guest actually toured with them as their guitarist as Nigel Tufnell.
I guess it occurs to me that I like him. I like him a lot.
Yeah.
To that end, it's often not difficult to have him talk at depth about things that he's done that unfortunately didn't get all that much attention. Mm. He's in the twilight of his career and he's starting to realize that he worked his ass off on a whole bunch of things that nobody noticed. And at the time, it was like it was great just for the sake of the art. But now it's like, hey, wait a minute.
I didn't get paid.
nobody ever pats me on the back for that one.
Yeah. Well, now you've got like kind of this whole culture of, you know, online geeks who celebrate that kind of stuff. So, I mean, if anything, he's kind of getting it now.
Right.
I would hope. Like the AV Club Random Rules columns or interviews are great because they get these kind of those, you know, that guy actors and, you know.
So I should read that.
There's some great ones. I sometimes send them to you, I think. But,
yeah.
You know, like, who was the other guy? Alex Rocco.
Oh, wow.
You know.
Love him.
Yeah, you know, just like all these guys just who, you know, who've done like a zillion things over the years and just, you know, picking the most obscure ones and just having them talk about, you know, I think he's interviewing James Caan, you know. This guy Will Harris, who I kind of know through people. You know, he just kind of gets all these, you know, he lands all these great, you know, interviews and just kind of picks people's brains about, you know, just weird little, you know, what was your, first role, you know, going through the IMDb almost and just sort of picking, you know, key things. And
James Caan is super underrated.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, alongside Alex Rocco, two guys in The Godfather that you never really hear about that were in The Godfather.
But he was in some great movies too.
Oh yeah. I mean, that you often don't hear about.
Yeah.
Thief. Yeah. Yeah. Slither.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, really, really great stuff.
But I guess like at one point this guy Will asked him about Alien Nation. And he says something like, "Why the fuck are you asking me about that?" You must be getting desperate.
That's funny. The Laverne and Shirley thing. Did I have something about that? Oh, no. It wasn't so much that I had something about that I had a Seattle type thing. Didn't I have something? Because you mentioned Seattle.
Yeah, it's set in Seattle now instead of Milwaukee.
I could have sworn. Oh, yes. Here I am. Happy Days.
Oh, well.
I want to reboot Happy Days.
Yeah.
Except I'm going to call it Dazed and Abused. The first season of ABC's Happy Days debuted in 1974 and took place in 1952, representing a gap of 22 years. This fall, Dazed and Abused celebrates the nostalgic moments of a group of close-knit Seattle-based grunge lovers in 1991.
Nice.
See Richie, Potsy, Ralph, and of course, the Fonz, pierce their lips, play Super Nintendo, celebrate the birth of Jamie Lynn Spears, and mourn the death of Freddie Mercury. By the end of season one, Richie will join Operation Desert Storm and perish when a Scud missile backfires just outside of Iraq.
Yeah. You know what? Somebody's probably working on that right now.
Do you think?
I think.
Well, they're crazy if they don't.
Sure. Speaking of going to Iraq, do you know that guy Jason Everman? He was in like a zillion bands in Seattle.
He was in Nirvana.
He was in Nirvana. He was in Soundgarden. He was a bass player after Hero left and before Ben Shepherd. He was in another band too. But he became an Army Ranger and went to Afghanistan.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I didn't know it either. I was reading a great book called what the fuck is it called now? It's by this guy Mark Yarm.
Right.
Everyone Loves Our Town.
Right. I know the book. I haven't read
it. It's really good. Actually, I have it. I'll lend it to you.
Okay.
And it, you know, it's a oral history of the Seattle scene.
Oh, great.
And you know, talks to this guy Everman, who was kind of like, you know, the Pete Best of, like, you know, three different bands, and then ended up going to Afghanistan. He just decided to, like, do the most un-rock and roll thing imaginable, and he joined the army and became like a ranger and went to Afghanistan, and, you know, like, obviously got back all right. But
what are your thoughts on that phenomenon? You know, you always hear that idea that, you know, for lack of a better way of putting it, like the Pete Best of a band is almost always positioned as somebody who missed out, you know, if only they had stuck around, or if only
they had more talent.
Well, that's, I think maybe that's, maybe,
wasn't Pete Best a good drummer? Like,
well,
I mean, I don't really know.
Well, according to George Martin, no.
No, okay.
But I guess my question is this. Do you think there are as many incidents where if only that person had stuck around, they could have achieved stardom? Or is it often, as often or always, that the band that were in question never would have been legends if that person stuck around, because the other guy wouldn't have shown up?
Right.
Like, without Ringo, there's no Beatles or whatever.
Without Pete Townsend, Roger Daltrey's playing lead guitar, and, you know, and
nothing happens. Yeah. Nothing happens.
Yeah, I think the latter is correct. I think the former is what these guys think. If only I'd stuck in the band, it would have been huge, but I would have been there, you know?
Right. So the bitterness is, you know, these guys really need to let themselves off the hook. I mean, it's sort of a sad reality, except, you know, you can kind of free yourself of all this bitterness by sort of facing the sad reality that it wasn't going to happen.
Right. You know, these guys who, you know, are pissed off because they got kicked out of the band for whatever reason.
So I missed out on millions.
Dave Mustaine. No, you didn't. Dave Mustaine, you know, who made money.
That's the best example.
With Megadeth, but, you know, I mean, you saw Some Kind of Monster, right?
Yeah.
You know, he's crying.
He cried.
He's still fucked up about getting the boot from Metallica.
He thinks he missed out on millions. Did he?
Yeah. Would they have been the same band with him? I don't know. But, I mean, the guy's, you know, is talented, and he can play guitar. But
is he a lead guitar player? Is he?
Yeah.
Is Kirk Hammett, is he the...
You'd swap out
Kirk Hammett for him.
I don't know if they were... Yeah, I think Hammett came in to replace him. I don't think they were in the band at the same time.
So that's the big question, right?
Yeah. But he was a fucking drunk. I mean, they all were, but I guess he was, like, really bad.
Okay.
Like, missing shows and practices and stuff, and so...
Oh, well, finally, then it gets even more interesting, because it's not about chemistry or anything, or sound, or anything like that. It becomes about happenstance. Like, would they have missed the show that exposed them to the guy who made the phone call and sent the fax that got them the deal?
I suspect, like, that was an excuse because they just didn't like him. Maybe he was a dick, because he's certainly becoming a dick these days. But
who's that?
Mustaine.
But do you see what I'm saying? Like, if Mustaine was in the band,
would they
have missed some show?
Maybe.
That could have set the chain reaction of events that made them legends.
Maybe. And maybe if he had his shit together, you know, they still go on to be huge.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, that's the whole, you know, just because you have a guy who's technically good at what he does doesn't mean that band works, right?
Right. That's right. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, watching that documentary where he's, you know, crying because, you know, people come up to him on the street and still yell Metallica at him, you know?
Oh, man.
Which does have to, you know, that does have to suck, I would think, you know?
Well, it raises the question, in this new version of Happy Days that takes place in Seattle and it's all grungy, who's the Howard Cunningham? Because he's sort of the unsung glue that makes the show work.
Right.
He provides the fatherly advice. You know, you know, if not the actor, then what's his, what's the role on the show?
It's Kyle MacLachlan.
It's a guy who runs a record store, right? That's the character, you know, and it's Kyle MacLachlan. Is that what it is? Okay.
Right. Well, because I don't know if you watch Portlandia at all, but he's been playing
he's
mayor.
He's the mayor, right? Yeah. I've seen...
And he plays bass in a reggae band. It's hilarious. but it'd be kind of nice because it's a throwback to the early 90s, too, because he was the young buck on Twin Peaks. He was the, you know, young detective, and then before that, you know, Blue Velvet, even for years before that. But you know, kind of, you know,
the guy obsessed with pie or something like that, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's a damn good piece of pie, damn good coffee. I gotta watch that show again. It's been so long, but yeah, like who would you have as your main characters in this show? We want to.
Oh, actors, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh. Boy, I wish I'd thought that through. I don't know. I don't know who's available these days. You know? Who are the guys? Who are the?
I'm trying to think. So yeah, you want?
I think, you know, in general, the kids on the original Happy Days were pretty much unknowns, other than Ron Howard. He was the closest thing to a known commodity back then.
Yeah, nobody knew who Winkler was. And he wasn't a kid. He was like 35 and he was on that show too. Playing a high schooler.
And he was like a trained Shakespearean actor. He was from the Yale acting program.
Hey. I watched a clip of it was Tom Hanks. He was on one of the later day shows is like this guy who he was the only character who actually like knocked Fonzie down or something like that. Like he's like he came back to town and he was like a jiu-jitsu martial artist or something, and like he got in a big fight with Fonzie, and like it's pretty funny.
Well, I'll have to seek that out.
Yeah, you know, it's on YouTube. But it's hilarious. But it was, I think it was, you know, in those post Ron Howard years.
I don't know if I need to seek that one out then.
Well, you can just watch, you know, it's just funny.
Just
to
watch
see
that moment.
Fighting Henry Winkler. Yeah, it's kind of a funny scene. But
the man who knocked Fonzie down.
But yeah, I mean, and also, like, these main characters for your show, would they represent a band, or are they just kind of archetypes of the scene, or like, you know what I mean? Like, or would they go and see Nirvana play, or, you know?
Oh, honestly, like, what are they?
Are they actual, like, supposed to represent a band, or are they just, like, fans?
I think to make the show work, that it has to be, you know, you have to be able to let the nostalgic moments move in and out of them. You know, they have to, the equivalent of Arnold's is a record store where they hang out. In fact, the prototype for it would be the record store that was around the corner from my apartment when I lived in Seattle, which was Cellophane Square. That was the hot record store in that neighborhood. And so they're just high school kids. So
it'd be like
a bunch of high school kids.
Yeah. There'd be like, you know, this grad student thumbing through records in the back of the store every episode.
You know, just plays
young Rick Doody.
Yeah, exactly. The executive producer.
That's right.
Puts himself the Hitchcock puts himself in the scene.
That's right.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, you look at the camera. Hey, you guys should check out this Captain Beefheart album. Beat it, old man.
we're drinking coffee. It should be one of those, you know, it's just a lot of tokenism.
Yeah, right.
You know, you just, like, drop a lot
we're
of
We're just hanging on the flippity-flop.
Yeah. We're going to go throw some fish over at the Pike Place Market. And then go listen to some Mud Honey.
That's right. Oh, man. Sweet young thing ain't sweet no more. All right, my next one, speaking of Tom Hanks, is a remake of Bosom Buddies. The Tom Hanks, Peter Scolari, early 80s sitcom. That was the Peter Scolari show before he was on Newhart.
True.
About two guys who dress in drag to live in a women-only apartment building. This reboot would star Seth Rogen and Martin Starr as the title characters. The modern twist is that our protagonists actually live in one of El Paso's famed drag hotels, in which all the occupants openly dress in drag. Wackiness ensues. Co-starring Eddie Izzard and K.D. Lang.
So the complication is that they would be dressed as women dressing as men.
Right.
In order to be hiding, to be like incognito in this place. They had to, we're faking,
they had to
pretending
pretend to
they're
be,
women in drag.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I think Seth Rogen, he really needs that role. I mean,
yeah,
he really
does.
Doesn't have a hell of a lot to do these days.
Yeah, he's got nothing going on. Actually, I've heard a lot of good things about that This Is the End movie.
It looks very clever.
Yeah, I saw that. I went to my one movie a year that I go to. This is 40. A few months ago, and they had the trailer for it.
Yeah,
it looks really good. And I've actually seen a lot of reviews that say it's like possibly the funniest stoner movie ever, or one of them,
wow.
Which is high praise.
Yeah, boy, So better than Pineapple Express. That's my favorite stoner movie of the last few years.
Yeah, I think they said the one I saw is put it on in par with the first Harold and Kumar.
Boy, you know, you think about good stoner movies. There's a lot of them.
Yeah,
there's a lot, I mean, you know, Up in Smoke. Yeah. Is, you know, that's
yeah,
I mean, that's you know, geez. Then you, of course, you get into the subtleties of the definition of a stoner movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But boy, that's I mean, looking for. It's probably coming out pretty soon.
It's
right?
out like I think it came out 2 days ago or something.
Really?
Or yesterday or something? Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I'll get out and see that.
I'll see it when it comes on cable or DVD. I don't go and see anything.
Yeah, I sneaked out and saw Hangover 3.
Any good? I didn't hear good things about it. I haven't even seen Hangover 2.
You know, it's weird. No hangovers. Nobody had a hangover.
Oh, really? That's misleading advertising there.
Yeah. I mean, technically... yes, there was a hangover, but I mean, I don't want to throw a spoiler out there. But really, for the most part,
they didn't wake up, you know,
no,
in a hotel with a tiger.
No, yeah. No, in a way that you really can't win, right? Because if you do use the premise for the movie where they have to go back and figure out what happened to them,
right?
If you do that, then it's like, well, wait a minute, come on,
how many times can this happen?
Exactly. Yeah. On the other hand, if you don't do it, it's like, well, what's the point, right? I mean,
I saw this.
Isn't that what the movie is? Isn't that what these movies are?
Doesn't each movie have to have like a wild animal in a strange place, right? Because this one had giraffe and they had a tiger in the first one. I don't know about the second one.
It's almost like a scavenger hunt.
Yeah,
right? It's a little checklist of Jesus. Shit that you gotta have.
Yeah,
yeah.
The formula.
So in that respect. Yeah, it's sort of lost before they'd even tried.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
But given that, if you give them a pass because they lost before they'd even tried, okay, killed, you know, an hour and a half, you know.
Sure.
So, I don't know.
You can do a lot of things, you know, to kill an hour and a half.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I mean, that's true. I mean, I didn't get into a car accident. I didn't stick myself with needles.
Sure.
You know? So, in that respect, good movie.
It's a win-win for everybody.
Though I think I would probably watch the pilot for your TV series here before I'd watch that again.
Yeah,
definitely.
Thank you.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like yeah, stoner movies though. Not being a stoner, I've always enjoyed them.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know why, other than they're just funny. But you know. It's just, I can appreciate him, I guess, even though I don't actually partake of the ganja.
Smile. trouble at school, alone at lunch again. I didn't know you when I broke my knee. Spent the summer on crutches and everybody teased, except for this one friend I almost forgot.
Speaking of that, though, I've got, I think, a terrific show to pitch.
I thought you had some weed you're going to share.
Well, I've got a great show I can
okay.
pitch you. I want to reboot Mork and Mindy.
I have a reboot of Mork and Mindy, too.
Okay, well, we'll duel.
Okay.
We'll duel.
Yours is probably better.
Mine is called Mork and Lindsay.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I don't know where this is going.
I want to get Robin Williams.
Ooh.
To...
Reprise.
Yeah, I want him to stay in his original role. Robin Williams stars as the iconic alien, now 30 years older, still living in that same apartment in Boulder, Colorado, where, you know, in Colorado, weed is legal now.
It's true.
Fully legalized. Where he tries to relate to his mismatched roommate, the attractive young manager of a high-end marijuana dispensary. He's still the alien, but now look who's spaced out.
I got one hole in your plot device, though.
What is it?
Don't Orkin's age in reverse?
Oh, fuck.
Because remember, like, Jonathan Winters?
Jonathan Winters, yeah.
He was a baby.
Well, you know how these things are. We'll just throw that away.
Yeah.
And just ignore it, you know? Or you know, well, actually, maybe that's the second episode where we just sort of
explain
how we reversed it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
don't hammer out the beats.
But the whole because here's the thing. Here's the thing is that... Because the thing that sort of makes this whole thing work is he's now completely, assimilated.
Yeah.
You know, he's now still has all of his work and powers, but he's stodgy, a little bit stodgy.
Does he rock the suspenders, rainbow suspenders stuff?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's the weird part, is he's got all those, like, magical powers and stuff. He can still point at shit and make it move around, and, you know, he still has an excessive benevolence toward eggs and all that junk, except he's now the straight one. Right. And this you know, ditzy chick he lives with is just high all the time. You know, she's always smoking off of a bong made out of a wiffle bat.
Played by Lindsay Lohan?
Why not? Sure, yeah.
See, that's what I thought. When you said Lindsay, I was thinking, oh, it's got to be Lohan.
I just wanted a rhyme.
Yeah.
I just like rhymes. But, yeah, I think that's good.
I still remember the Happy Days episode where Mork made his debut, which ended up being a dream that Richie had.
Yeah.
That an alien came down and, you know, I remember, like, the next day, I can still remember, I was like in, I don't know, fifth or sixth grade, walking to school, my buddy's going, did you see Happy Days last night? It was awesome.
Funniest thing ever.
This guy, yeah, it was an alien. It was hilarious. He said, Shazbot, and, you know.
Right.
And then, yeah, based on the popularity of that episode, it was a show the next year.
Oh, yeah.
And then really, like, I was just reading about it. It was only on the air for, like, 4 years, and I think the first one was a super hit, and then they tried to change it in the second year, got rid of, like, her parents, Mindy's parents, and, like, brought in all these other characters. And I remember that, like, that guy Jay Thomas, they brought him on, like,
yep,
and they totally changed, and they tried to make it a romantic thing between Mork and Mindy.
Yeah.
Whereas before, it was just kind of Mork being weird and, you know, bleep lorp, I'm an alien. You know, and then they totally started fucking with, and they moved it around in different time slots, and the ratings totally dropped.
It's the dumbest thing.
And then it just went down from there.
Yeah.
And then he started making movies, and it was doing, like, even more coke, and he was gone. But
yeah, I mean, you think about those changes. How dumb.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what just insane ideas.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole premise of the show
that
is
was successful. Like, why wouldn't you? You know, it's like taking AC/DC and making them play synths or something. You know, it's like stick to what works, motherfucker.
I mean, you gotta. I would like to. Do you suppose any of that stuff was focus grouped or anything? Do you think people said, like, I don't like those old people?
I don't know if it's focus grouped or if it's network notes, you know, like they're saying, you know, we got to make this thing younger, snappier, this can be bigger. Let's get it punchy. Yeah. Let's punch it up. You know? But yeah, like it was needless tinkering with something that was working. Like it actually, I saw it was the number 3 rated show its first year, higher than one, two or three. Higher than Happy Days,
which
spawned it. So
sure. It sounds so stupid to think of, to like overthink it. But the whole thing that made it work was Mork not fitting in with shit.
Right.
And so you need to have, like, he lives with a girl. Her dad is old and stodgy and doesn't understand him. You know, like you have all these different ways of not fitting in with things.
And
so you have a different sex, you have a different age, you have a different, you know, you got to have all these different things. And instead, all they did was dull all the conflict down.
Smooth the edges.
Bring in, now everybody's a similar age.
Right.
Now I think they made, do you remember what those other things? It was a delicatessen, is what it was.
Yeah.
And they younged her friends down. They made the people who ran the delicatessen were like kind of, they were hippies. You know, so now they were like a little too open-minded. They kind of liked Mork. Like, well, that's stupid. You know, these are open-minded people who are closer to his age.
Yeah.
Well, what's he gonna? You know, how are you gonna make any plots happen?
Right.
You know, it's just stupid.
Yeah,
tragic.
Why are these people
just tragic?
We should be making decisions.
Clearly, I mean, you know, this has just been all gold.
It is. Speaking of which,
let me hear yours.
Okay, so here's my. I don't have a whole lot here, but. In my remake, the alien crash lands in hipster central Portland and is trailed by a documentary crew. Because, you know, that's what all the shows do now.
That's true.
Mork is played by Jonah Hill and Mindy by Michelle Williams.
Jonah Hill is Mork.
I was trying to think, like, who's, like, you know, Robin Williams like now? Who's kind of frenetic? I mean, really, it isn't Jonah Hill, but... I was trying to think of, like, young comic actors who were kind of spazzy.
I would just say that he owns that character, you know?
Yeah, but, oh, totally. But, you know, I'm presuming that he doesn't want to go back and do
it. It's a reboot, you know? See, so to your point, you know, you reinvented, you adapt the character, you have somebody do it differently, right?
Speaking of reboots in Jonah Hill, have you seen 21 Jump Street? Because I heard it's really good.
I have. I forgot everything about it. I need to see it again.
I've heard that it's very funny. Unexpectedly so.
I really enjoy... Well...
Because it wasn't a funny show to begin
unexpectedly
with.
Unexpectedly so, and that, like, who expects anything like that to be any good?
Well, and the show itself was a drama on TV, but they turned it into a comedy,
yeah,
right?
Well, yeah, although these days, you know, anything's a reboot if you just attach an old title to it.
Which pretty much is what they did, right?
I mean, all we have to do is, you know, let's just make a detective show. Yeah, is it even the same characters? Hawaii and call it Hawaii 5-0, you know?
Well, they did that.
I mean, yeah, I suppose it had similar characters. But, I mean, everything's a reboot if you want it to be.
Yeah.
You just take some old title and throw it on there, you know?
Like Two Broke Girls.
Is it?
That's a reboot of Laverne and Shirley.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
You know, your two female protagonists.
Right.
Cracking wise.
Mm. But, you know, as far as the documentary thing, that's that whole trend, that's just lazy writing, right? It's like now we don't have to write scenes because anything that we want, any leftover jokes we have in the notebook, you just have somebody sit in a chair and stare in the camera.
Yeah,
and
you know, I was surprised when Modern Family did that because it's actually like I've watched that show a few times and it's actually pretty funny, but like,
yeah,
like, I mean,
it's like, who's making these fucking documentaries?
Yeah. I haven't watched The Office finale because it was on a few weeks ago. I have it DVR because I kind of got sick of the show and stopped watching it. But I wanted to see the finale because the documentary crew actually is on it, I guess. And kind of explain. They show the documentary 8 years in the making or whatever. But it's just like, I mean, that's the thing about British shows. You know, the original Office was like, what?
Six episodes
and done, you know?
Get in, get out.
And the U.S. Office had some pretty good moments, but
I liked it.
If you know these shows with the documentary crews, it's like, you know, at some point you just can't even explain it anymore. Like who's gonna follow? Who's got the time and, you know, money to follow these people around? Just in their a Modern Family, it's literally just, I don't even know what the point is of a documentary. It's literally just following these people around and they're daily errands.
That's a really good point. You should at least be able to discern what the point, like, what would this documentary be?
Because, like,
what the hell would this be?
The Office is, like, you know, the documentary is a portrait of, like, a, you know, typical U.S. business, I guess. I don't know, but...
who wants to see that?
Yeah. A paper company.
World's,
you know,
most boring documentary.
Yeah. I mean, I guess people are making documentaries about anything these days, but...
Well, that's part of the problem,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it used to be like you had to actually have a good topic. Now it's just sort of like...
Well, you know, that is a huge...
I collect shoes.
That's a huge problem is that now that cameras are so cheap, everybody thinks they're a documentary filmmaker if they can get somebody to sit in a chair and answer questions, and research is just gone. Like, you know, like... That's the reason why Ken Burns is like the president of the world or whatever the hell he is, because he's the only guy who's willing to go dig for shit and then sit and write and write and write and write and then sit in front of a microphone and record a voice.
Yeah.
And like, those are documentaries.
Yeah.
It's like everybody else, like, you watch these cable channels, it's like, well, there's going to be a documentary on, you know, whatever, you know, Johnny Unitas. It's like, oh, we're going to watch a bunch of old
talking
men
sit
in a chair and go, he was a genius. He was the only guy. Okay, all right, fine. Or you watch those DVD extras where that are just, okay, now it's just going to be scenes from the movie. It's like, this.
Right.
I can't watch DVD extras because it's just nothing but the movie in 30-second clips.
Right.
You know? Like, there's nothing going on here. And that's why the Ken Burns documentaries just start to look better and better and better and better, you know, because there's actual work put into it. There's, you know, there's all sorts of stuff you've never seen before and information you didn't know, and it's all strung together in a way that's really interesting.
I will say that, like, some DVD commentary tracks are pretty good. Like, The Simpsons, I don't know if you've got any of their DVD sets, but, like, I've got a couple from the early, you know, kind of the early good seasons, and there's some pretty funny, like, they get, you know, the voice actors on and some of the producers, and there's some pretty, you know, you learn some stuff.
I have the first season one. That's got that's got some interesting stuff on it.
Like, the one, like the Michael Jackson episode, you know, talking about that one, and, you know, some good stuff like that. But I saw this hilarious thing about Arnold Schwarzenegger doing commentary tracks for his movies, and basically all he does is go, "This is me going up to a tree. This is me." Oh, he just narrates the action. It's like, "Oh, here I am tying my shoe. Oh, this was a long scene." And they had him on like Conan O'Brien or something, and they were showing like some of this stuff, and they just busted on him for it because it's literally just him narrating, like, "Oh, I remember this day. It was very hot." You know, just stuff like that.
I wish I could remember the one I was watching. I watched one day where I switched over to the commentary track, and I thought at first it wasn't working because it was just silent. Huh. And then all of a sudden, the voice comes on and goes, "Oh, I still have that shirt." And I thought, "Oh, Jesus." I just turned it off.
Oh, man.
It's like, why did they bother?
But yeah, the whole documentary thing, it's just, you know, you talk about that, like, anybody who has a camera thinks they're a documentarian. It's the same thing with, you know, everybody thinks they're a photojournalist now because they've got a phone with a camera in it, you know what I mean? Right. So,
yeah.
You know, like, and actually it just happened at the Chicago Sun-Times just shook hand their whole, you know, photo staff, and basically they're just teaching staff to take photos with their iPhones,
right?
You know? And it's kind of, you know, Pulitzer Prize-winning photographers are getting, you know, kicked out in the street because, you know, they cost too much to keep on staff.
Mm.
And, you know, apparently, you know, photos taken from your 10 megapixel phone are better than, you know,
good enough.
Yeah. Somebody with a Nikon, you know, actually, like, knows how to compose.
Yeah.
It's a sad state of, I mean, you know, it's just like anybody with a microphone, you know, suddenly is a broadcaster. So.
that's ironic. Huh?
You got anything else?
Oh,
keep talking. I don't have any more of my pitches.
Oh, geez.
Although I did have one for that I didn't finish for Alf the Musical, inspired by the success of the Book of Mormon and Spamalot. But beyond that, I hadn't got anything.
Oh yeah, the short one I have of that sort is The Baritones. It's a reboot of The Sopranos. It's a shot-for-shot remake of The Sopranos using only actors weighing over 400 pounds.
Well, a lot of those guys were actually in The Sopranos. So.
I suppose so.
Bobby Bacala.
Yeah, I have a number of things. Here's an odd one. I want to do a reboot of Leave It to Beaver.
Ah, you know, I thought about that.
Yeah. What was yours about?
Well, I should do that. I just never hammered out the beats, as it were. But
mine's called Leave It to Cheever. The early 20th century childhood of John Cheever is dramatized in this witty family series celebrating the Chekhov of the suburbs in Quincy, Massachusetts. Years before John Cheever would achieve international stardom as a novelist, in the series pilot, as the New England shoe and textile industries decline, the future Pulitzer winner's father, Frederick Cheever, loses most of his money and begins to drink heavily. So funny.
Yeah. I can see, like, people would want to, you know, set aside their worldly troubles and escape away to a world full of fantasy and wonder.
I was laughing when I wrote it. All
right. That's a must-see TV right there. Thursday night, 8:30.
All right. What about a reboot of the Partridge Family?
Okay.
It's called the Kardashian Family.
Oh, boy.
Divorced mom Kristen Houghton Kardashian Jenner and her children embark on a music career. But while famously displayed in the original series end credits, the voices and instruments of the Partridge Family were augmented by professional musicians and singers, all of the music heard by the Kardashians in this new series must be made by the Kardashians. Yeah. That's the twist.
And this is how we torture to enemy combatants. Force them to watch and listen to this.
I'd love to do that. I'd love to say, like, here's your advance. You know, pay them enough that they want to do it, that they have to do it. Give them the instruments to say, you have to write your own songs. You have to play your own instruments. You have to sing.
Be like Mark Wahlberg in Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got the touch.
Did you ever see John C. Reilly in that Dewey Cox story?
Walk Hard? No, I haven't seen that. This must be good, right?
Oh, see it tonight. Yeah. See it tonight if you can. Oh, my God. That's like one of the funniest movies ever made. Damn. All right. What about a remake, a reboot of Welcome Back, Kotter?
I like it.
I want to call it Welcome Back, Kotter.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. I figure, you know, good enough is good enough, right?
21 Jump Street, what the hell?
Yeah. Yeah. After the collapse of his fledgling video game company, Kotter returns to the junior college where he got his video game design degree to teach the program. A stories and B stories alternate focus on a core group of faculty and a core group of students. Additional color is provided by a revolving door cast of students and provides a good mix of misunderstood geniuses, dope-crazed morons, middle-aged suck-ups, and probationary weirdos. It would be a good role for your Patton Oswalt, your Chris Hardwick,
sure.
Kumail Nanjiani, Jonah Ray. Any of those guys could play Kotter. Except I realize that this is really just Community, right?
Right, yeah.
It's just, yeah.
Well,
yeah. Maybe.
Well, and you know, I was just thinking, like, remember the show Head of the Class?
Yes. Howard Hessman. Yeah.
And it was his class was all the genius students, I guess, right?
That's how they twisted it.
Yeah.
They said, instead of the stupid kids, right. They'd be the smart kids.
Right. Yeah. So you had the you had these nerds who were smart, and then you had somehow Robin Givens was in there. But and remember, like, Hessman left after a couple of years, and Billy Connolly took over for like a season.
Oh, as the teacher. Okay, I was going to say somebody different because I think I'm thinking of still a third show. What was the one that was just like that with Tom? Damn it. I'll have to get back to you on it. There's another show that's like exactly like that with still somebody else.
Yeah, I don't know.
Mm. Okay. Wait, I still got more. Here's my idea. I want to do a reboot of the Jay Leno show.
Oh, the 10 o'clock show that he had?
Yeah. Yeah, I want to call it the all-new Jay Leno show. Just quick background. Comedians everywhere cried foul when legendary talk show host Jay Leno used a primetime slot to ensure he would appear on TV daily ahead of rival Conan O'Brien.
Yep.
Leveraging limited privacy domain to focus video surveillance equipment on Leno whenever possible, the most awkward parts captured on tape are the focus of the all-new Jay Leno show. The pilot features Jay eating an entire bag of barbecue pork rinds while watching a pay-per-view called The Cock Show Hosts. Later, he picks his nose and eats it.
90% of that show will be him working on his cars.
Yeah, I guess
or doing a stand-up tour. Like, is that guy ever home?
Yeah, I don't know. I like the idea of what he does when he's at home, but
yeah,
it's just the idea that he beat him at his own game.
Yeah, you know? What's on the news today? You know, he's always like, you know, you'll show him watching like CNN. You know, taking copious notes. Oh, yeah, that'll be a good one. What about those Syrians?
I got one more. It's a little bizarre.
All right.
It's a reboot of My Three Sons. It's called My Three Muns.
Hmm?
Raised by her billionaire widowed father and hot-tempered bachelor uncle, Olivia Munn, stars as super hot schizophrenic, whose trio of personalities creates a never-ending series of hilarious mishaps unless the show is unsuccessful. Then it'll be only one mishap. In the pilot episode, Olivia's charitable personality, Darlene, promises local schoolchildren hundreds of cakes for their upcoming picnic, leaving nervous Carlene, who has no arms or legs, with the job of baking them, only to find that selfish Babs plans instead to spend the day at the beach in a tiny bikini and do no baking at all.
We like this.
Hilarious.
Friggin' Babs.
That's the show. My Three Muns.
My Three Muns.
Schizophrenics, eh?
Sure.
Yeah.
United States of Tara. Yes, yeah.
I've heard of it, but no, I don't.
That was from that. Toni Collette plays a woman with four personalities. It's on Showtime.
That's so insensitive. I mean,
and like this is
a joke.
The advertising literally has her like, you know, like one of them's a dude and one of them's like a hot chick and one of them's like a nerd and yeah. Look it up sometime. The print ads alone are hilarious.
Really?
Yeah, but I guess it was.
Sounds like it was a roaring success.
I think it had a couple seasons. I mean, she's a really good actress, but kind of a fucked up show. I guess I haven't seen it. Well, these are you know, as always with these pitch shows, you know, I would watch any of these over what's on TV. A lot of what's on TV now.
Yeah, I would too. Actually, yeah.
Yeah. Especially all the reality crap. We could do one just on reality shows.
We have, didn't we?
Yeah.
We could stand to do another one. But. Yeah. Yeah. Because that was, I think,
Who Wants to Punch a Millionaire, man? It's a classic right there.
It's also where we came up. We really figured out all of the intricacies of the show Blue Balls.
Yeah.
If you remember that one. That one's still,
you can make that one.
I really think that could work. I think it would be very popular.
Remember, we also did the one where we actually planned out a whole season. We were programming our own networks, and we actually planned out all the shows. That was a good one. We'll do that again sometime. Maybe in the fall.
I mean, we kind of just did.
Yeah, right. Well, we just did sitcoms mainly, though. I'm talking all the programming. But no, that was good stuff, man.
Yeah, thanks for doing this.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
You are listening to Completely Conspicuous with Jay Kumar.
That was Murray A. Lightburn of the Deers with Motherfuckers, Speedy Ortiz with No Below, and Magical Clouds with Bugs Don't Buzz. Now it's time for the Bonehead of the Week. This week's honor goes to an Oregon man wearing a Got Beer t-shirt who was arrested last week for drunk driving, according to thesmokinggun.com. Christopher Harrow, 41, was driving a Ford pickup truck last Wednesday evening when a Roseburg Police Department officer pulled the vehicle over for a traffic violation. During subsequent questioning, the officer concluded that Harrow was intoxicated. Harrow was busted for DUI and booked into the Douglas County lockup. He was freed from custody Thursday after posting bond on the misdemeanor count. A police spokesperson said he could not comment on Harrow's blood alcohol content or his choice of a t-shirt. Now to close things out, here's a few songs for the occasion.
Bye.
Elvis Costello and the Attractions with Goon Squad from the album Armed Forces, and Public Image Limited with Public Image off the album of the same name. And that wraps up episode 284 of Completely Conspicuous. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you'll join me next time. The Mets song is a part of the Adult Swim single series. You can download the song for free at Stereo Gum. Speedy Ortiz song is on the album Magic Arcana on Car Park Records. You can download the song for free at Stereo Gum. The Magical Cloud song is on the album Impersonator on Matador Records. Download it for free at Chrome Waves. And the Murray A. Lightburn song is on the album Murray A. Lightburn's Masked Light. Which I believe is self-released. It's vinyl only, and I don't have a lot of more information than that. But you can download the song for free at SoundCloud. Jay Breitling produced the opening and closing themes of the show. Voiceover work is courtesy of James Grelian. Completely Conspicuous is a Tan God production.